You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com. It's only going to take one card to break it.
That's the thing that my magic nightmares are made of right there.
They saw some bugs work out, let's put it that way.
We're certainly too lazy for that.
I try to make it a point after the fact to say, hey, not cool.
When he's thinking out loud, that's what it sounds like.
That's where you build the new behavior model.
I just wish they would give you a little bit more value.
The prize wall was, in my opinion, atrocious.
Oh, you brave soul, wandering in the wilderness without an episode of TryHards for far too long. Here to make sure that your ears are happy once again this week, it is we, the TryHards. Brian Tibbetts, Matt Hurley, and I'm merely Sean Seacrease. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of TryHards. Coming up, we get a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to be an LGS owner. Recently, we'll say retired LGS owner Ben Stone Stomberg joins us on this episode of TryHards. We'll figure out why Standard may suddenly be the one looking in the window, envious of all the Team Trio events that were put into place because nobody liked the former iteration of Standard. We'll figure out what Matt did with his weekend and why he was incommunicado for most of it. But most of all, we'll figure out why Big Data still scares some people at the local LGS. Getting us started this week, it's Brian with What Are You Drinking, Brian? Something smells delicious.
I am so happy about this. I got a kind of surprise package in the mail. My sister's guy friend, I guess I'll call him, up in Chicago, I got him some nice IPA beer glasses for Christmas. He loves IPAs and stuff, and so he had sent me a picture at one point saying, hey, I'm drinking this beer in the new glasses, it looks awesome. And I sent him a text back saying, man, I'm jealous about that. Next thing I know, he sends me a six-pack in a box, which is just the best kind of mail to get. So, guys, I'm drinking from Three Floyds Brewery in Munster, Indiana, the Zombie Dust.
No.
One of my favorite IPAs of all time.
That is incredibly hard to get.
Yes, they are not easy to get, especially in my neck of the woods or, Sean, your neck of the woods. So I'm guarding these like, you know, gold in the house. Not that the girls are having them, but Megan was like, ooh, I'd like to try one. I'm like, oh, really? Really? Well, maybe we can split one. So that's about as far as I let her give. So, no, I'm definitely enjoying the Zombie Dust this evening.
All right. We'll see if either one of us can come even close to the Three Floyds discovery. Matt, what are you having tonight?
I am drinking a Dogfish Head Liquid Truth Serum IPA. Might not be supposed to be drinking this right now, but I am. It may cause a little turmoil in the South. Decent choice in the Zombie Dust. Crazy because everyone goes crazy about that. I've never been insane about it, but I do buy a six-pack every month or 2 months and give them to one of my suppliers because he's a huge Zombie Dust fan and it gets me on his good side. So it's worth the $12 for a six-pack.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes is the mantra that I would like to think that one of our friends here in Galesburg goes by when they do this for us. We have an acquaintance who has people in Wisconsin, and they're up there about once a month. So once a month, like magic, there is a beer fairy, I have determined, a full case of New Glarus Spotted Cow just shows up on the back porch. So I'm enjoying the Spotted Cow here this evening. It got a little unusually warm across the Midwest this week. The lighter body Spotted Cow seems right on time tonight in Command Central. What magic did we play this week? Hopefully your weekend was filled with either new Standard or Team Trios or Limited or maybe even the opening weekend for Rivals of Ixalan Draft at your LGS. That's what I got the chance to do. I took a Big Data list with me this week. This was my project for the podcast. Frank Karstens on Channel Fireball famously does all of the very detailed math, whether it's about mana bases or percentage chances to draw if you're looking to draw certain cards in your combo deck or anything else. Well, he also uses his data compilers to put together preferential lists for new sets in Draft and Limited from some of the biggest name pros. So I grabbed his list heading into this weekend and took the top 100 from Rivals with me. This caused quite a stir when I sat down at the table and got it out. Several people gave me the eyebrow, and a couple of people said, I don't know if that's legal. And I said, it's certainly not at the Pro Tour. Glanced around the LGS and said, okay, there's no pros here. I think we're good. And that didn't really sate any of their suspicions at that point. So I asked the LGS owner, Daniel, and he said, just don't hold up play. You know, we're going to allow it. Don't hold up the packs. Even though I used the list and I was ready to send Karsten's half of my winnings when I took the whole thing down, turns out I didn't have to send him anything at all because my deck ended up being kind of a mess. It was blue, white, aggro, splashing a couple things in red. And while it was fundamentally sound, I think I only had three cards that cost more than three in it. It was also, I would say I was three quality aggressive creatures away from where I wanted to be. And I followed the pick list probably too deep into pack two rather than focusing on it once I had my core. It was something I wanted to do as a learning curve and then report to you here on Tryhards. Big data, trying to integrate that into my release weekend draft. Good idea, I think, to give you a power level understanding of what you can pick and where you can go. But following it that far down the rabbit hole becomes counterproductive because rather than taking a C card that you actually play, you might take a B card, but then you're not taking anything else in that color. So you have to use a little bit of common sense along with that big data as you get the opportunity to integrate it. Matt, I know you had an interesting weekend of Magic. Give us just a taste, a tip of the iceberg, if you will.
Oh, I got to play in a huge Popper tournament and in one draft at GP Indy and then a draft during the week at the local LGS. It was a lot of fun. This new set is a whole lot of fun. The draft here locally at the LGS, I drafted just your typical black-white vampires. And I just found that I had a lot of solid picks and I had good synergy, but I was just getting blown out by the bombs, even though I had good removal as well. So didn't really do that well with that one. And Sean, you're kind of right. In this one, there's a lot of synergy, but you still need those finishers. I was lacking those finishers. I had like the six drop that you tap three vampires and bring it back. That's a 4/4 flyer. Yeah, I mean, I was a little disappointed in that draft, but it was a good first experience for me.
Matt also had plenty of things going on as he was at GP Indy for one day this past weekend. We'll get that report coming up a little bit later in the show. Brian, what Magic did you get to play this week?
A little bit of testing that you and I did, Sean, with your crazy modern brew against a couple of modern decks that I have put together. So wasn't able to make it down. They actually didn't have anything firing due to the upheaval in the LGS scene here in Galesburg, so didn't feel like I was missing out on too much. Was still a little sour that I wasn't able to even have the opportunity to go draft locally.
We'll have somebody who's responsible for that on the show a little bit later, so I think that's going to be one of the topics coming up here on this episode of Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's Patreon raffle. You know, we started the month with this, and then I knew it would be a super busy month, so we'll wrap up the month with it as well. It is time to once again grab our 49 eligibles, Matt tells me. This was my idea heading into the weekend. I knew that Wizards was going to have some kind of ban coming down in Standard, and I anticipated it being Energy. So I made sure to grab a full set of Ramunap Ruins to give away on this week's episode of Tryhards. It seems like those is not in demand as they were, let's say, a week ago as of this recording. But just for fun, I'm going to include two of those with a foil Champion of Dusk. All right. Do I think it's going to break Standard? No. Do I think it could be a one of? Yes. Does it look amazing in foil? You got that right. You'll have a chance to see it for yourself if you win. So the foil Champion of Dusk and two Ramunap Ruins. I have my number randomizer ready to go, Matt. We have 49 eligibles, 32. 32, Matt.
Danny Lim. That's a local to you, isn't it, Brian?
So wait. Danny the Planeswalker guy, Danny Lim?
Danny the Planeswalker guy, Danny Lim.
Okay, absolutely. Same guy. I have traded with him a million times, and he's somebody I can honestly say this about. The actual act of trading with him is more fun than the cards that you get. Like, he's just such a great guy and a good ambassador. Danny, congratulations. The two Ramunap Ruins, do whatever you can with them, man. You can probably trade him for a Planeswalker. And the foil Champion of Dusk, they'll be heading your way. I might just ship those to Brian since I have Express from try-hard location to try-hard location, and then he can drop them off
and
for
he
you.
He may be able to get a Tybalt or something out of the Ramnot runes.
I've got my collection of Tybalts is growing quite a bit. I pick those up whenever I can. It's only going to take one card to break it.
Oh, yeah, only
one
card.
And then I'll be able to cash in on all that sweet.
And it also required the banning of 24,000 other cards.
Well, hey, anything can happen, as we found out last week from Wizards with how they manage Standard. Congratulations, Danny. Hope you enjoy those. It's our privilege to give you something back for supporting us here on Try Hards. Guys, that brings us up to this week's Tournament Magic. This first one's going to be pretty quick, since the tryhards didn't assemble to take down GP Indy. It was Team Sealed. 514 teams collaborated and descended upon Circle City. In the end, it was Fi Yin Yu, Yi Chi Cheng, and Zhao Ziri Wu who took down PVDDR, Ifro, and Ben Stark in the finals. Each team in the top four had 13 or more GP top eights to its credit. Brian, we both love playing limited. Those are some daunting odds to get involved in a team trio and think that you're going to be able to climb to the top of the mountain when you see the skill level that's waiting for you in day two, let alone in the top four.
That's the thing that my magic nightmares are made of right there. Limited is so fun. I mean, I've really come around to limited. Everybody knows I love playing sealed. That's not a number I would have loved to have heard while I was building my deck or trying to assemble something in Indy. So, yes, you're right. I'm glad we didn't kind of take on that daunting task of trying to topple those Goliaths. This David is just not up to it right now. What a great group at the top. And so many teams kind of going there for limited. That seems like a really, really fun format. I've never done that before, to kind of go to a GP and do that kind of limited. I'd be a little hesitant to do it. I feel like I'd have to get a lot of practice in. Hurley, did it look like people were having a lot of fun?
Oh, yeah. It looked like everyone was having a blast. Unfortunately, like I said earlier, I really, due to my phone crisis, I really didn't have the entire time that I wanted. The locals that went up early, they were telling me, yeah, there's people practicing, and all the locals did absolute garbage.
Matt, now you had the chance to be there for day two. Did you peruse what the good decks were in sealed in the main event, or were you just focused on the side events that you were playing?
I perused. This set looked interesting only because usually in these team events, you get an amazing deck, an okay deck, and then just a rotten turd. From the winners, it looked like you had two synergistic good decks, and then you had the third deck was like a bomby deck. Because this is a very synergy-driven format. And so because of that, it was a very interesting sealed tournament. I believe it was Paulo Vito who was actually able to pull off the Polyraptor combo on camera in like the top four as well. It was just ridiculous. I think he created 32 Polyraptors or something like that. And then Channel Fireball was really good about the side events as well. So they had a really good, deep side event schedule. A lot of them were a little pricey, I'll be the first to admit. The PPTQ was full as well. The team limited one. I mean, that one was packed. All these kind of side events were three rounds as well. I think typically they're four, if I remember right. They had a ton of people doing the turbos as well. That's something I want to start to get into. The turbo constructed is you literally go up, you pay $5, and you just walk up to somebody who's also in a turbo constructed area, and then you sit down and you play a constructed match. And then winner gets 30 prize ticks, loser gets 20 or 10 prize ticks, which 10 prize ticks is about a pack of any random booster from a modern set. And then they had some late night turbo drafts as well, where you would just draft, play one round, and then if you went 1-0, you win 100 prize tickets. Those were cool. There was no $10 drafts. The cheapest drafts were $20 drafts. I'm a little upset about that. Do you guys miss kind of the time of the $10 SCG drafts where it was just like when you're entering to the next one?
Oh, I miss it. I understand that the game now is not the game that it was then. So I can't really pine for it because I think we're way past that.
I'm less concerned with the price tag to get in versus what you're winning. I miss the day of the 8-player win-a-box. That's what I miss. You know, that you throw in your $10, plate constructed, single elimination, winner gets the box. Those are the things that I miss from side events. I know that now the SCG on their tour has it structured just so your prize wall tickets just aren't enough to get a box. If you win one, you have to enter a second one and get some. I like that nice, clean finish. I would rather up the price of entry to still have it be a Winnebox. So if you have 8, make it 15. I understand that the days are gone of making it 10. Do you want to make it 12? Do you want to carry change for that at a venue? Maybe not, maybe. But if the price can't be 10, it doesn't have to be 20. Settle somewhere in between. And I like those nice, clean formats where you can play 3 rounds if you keep winning, and then you win something that you actually want.
I kind of agree with you on that as well. I will say, and this is from my limited view of only going Sunday. I got up, I actually overslept Sunday, and I didn't get up there until about 11:30. The tournament I wanted to play in, it was 12. The prize wall was, in my opinion, atrocious. They had three or four cases of singles, which is abnormal. The prizes on those were just terrible. They had some oversized cards that were fine. For an uncut foil sheet, you're looking at 1,500 prize tickets, which is roughly, let's see here, that's 150 packs. So you're looking at whatever 150 packs value is. I just think their price ticks were atrocious. And I could have sworn that they announced this, but this was not the case. You have to use your prize tickets at the tournament you're at. I thought since Channel Fire.
Yeah. That's a new thing that's cropped up in the past, 6 months to a year, I want to say. I kind of get it from a TO organizing standpoint, so that there's not some shenanigans about, people trying to go copy those things outside the venues after the fact. And I hate to sound so cynical, but I think that's really the world we're living in. That seems okay to me. I'm not too concerned about that. I definitely am with Sean and you, Hurley, on this about the clean prizes, the low pay, high reward, win a box and things like that. And the tickets, I don't think the prize ticks are going away, guys. I just wish they would give you a little bit more value for winning. It just kind of seems like even if you win, the prizes are all a little meh.
I was looking at everything. I'm like, nothing here sounds exciting to me. The reason I had 300 prize tickets, I got to play in Popper Double Up, and I didn't drop a game in all 3 rounds. All I got to say was amazing. I got to play next to the professor twice. He was very nice, and we kind of talked just a bit. I kind of feel sorry for him because with that fame that is the professor, tons of people would come up and say, hey, would you sign this? Will you do this? I mean, even in the bathroom, he was getting bugged. Oh. And I'm like, he was very nice about it. He was very, he was himself. But me personally, I would not want that. I played Blue Red Delver and Popper. We had over 200, I think it was 216 players was what the final was. There was a ton of people there. They were much more casual. Like a lot of people I heard say, oh, this is the first time I ever came to a GP. And I think you're pulling Popper players out of kind of the woodwork. It was interesting. It was fun to play against. Everyone was having a good time. But a lot of people were not aware of how judge calls work and how everything kind of happens at GPs. Definitely a friendly tournament, but at the same time, you're still at a GP doing side events. I'm going to try to hit up every single Popper tournament I can moving forward. Channel Fireball's just been amazed by how many people want to play it. The side events were run. They saw some bugs work out. Let's put it that way. Overall, I think the tournament went well. Everyone was having a good time, and I think everyone was generally happy.
So I have a question about the professor, actually, okay. since you were there. For me, the most amusing series that he's done is the Office Hours series, where he is the professor and then he calls planeswalkers into his office and has to have the meeting.
It's so good.
It's so genius. Good. He's referred to jokingly by, I believe it's Nyssa and Chandra, who have detention, as Tybalt. Did anyone refer to him as Tybalt?
No. And okay. I will say, though, the professor voice that he has, you know what I'm talking about, his very specific one. Mm-hmm. When he's thinking out loud, that's what it sounds like. You would see him draw a card, and like at one point he was getting mana screwed. He was playing Affinity. He was getting mana screwed. He would go, come on, in his professor voice, and it was absolutely hysterical, and I laughed out loud. And he kind of like looked over at me, and I'm like, your on-screen voice is your mental voice. And I never made that connection before, and he just kind of chuckled at it.
Well, that's awesome. He seems like a great guy, and I'm sure he took it well all weekend long. Maybe Hurley's Pauper Report. It might have to be something that becomes a regular feature on the Patreon page, patreon.com/tryhards. That was the GP Indy this weekend. SCG was in Dallas for Team Trios. Asterisk, because nobody wanted to play previous standard. Well, what do you think about that decision now? May come back to haunt you. 206 teams got together to play standard, modern, and the king of all formats, yes, Legacy. Julian John, Jonathan Rossum, and Kevin King defeated Campion, Cortez, and Finken. So that was Mardu Vehicles, Humans, and Lands defeating Black Green Constrictor, Bant Coco, and Turbo Depths in the finals. I know these are fun to play in, but whether or not you're there as a team or as three individuals looking for the best possible result, these things are always so hard to quantify. And the data, well, it's there to be mined. If you're of that mind to do it, we're certainly too lazy for that here on Tryhards. So with the Classics there that weekend and the Team Trios, Brian, what drew your fancy? Was it the Standard Classic that had 89 players? By the way, that 89-player tournament seemed to be aggro with some sprinkled in combo along the way. Where's the control? Is it just too early, or his Wizards hated that deck type out of existence? I don't know. We'll have to answer that going forward. Are you excited for a new meta in Standard, or are you just kind of more interested in what happened in the team event?
I was definitely much more curious about what happened in the team event, because I feel like that's where the top players were. We're going to find some deck lists in there that might have, if nothing else, a kernel of what we're going to see going forward. And I think from the winning team, we can see that Mardu Vehicles is not dead. Mardu Vehicles is a deck that probably people have forgotten about with the rise of energy over the past year. And so this is a deck that really didn't lose a whole lot. Gideon, so what? There's great four drops that can slot right into that deck. I think that's a deck that we have to be on the lookout for Standard. The one thing that I would say about this is congratulations to Kevin King with Lands. I know he's come up short a few times at these team events and kind of always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Well, finally got to tie the knot this weekend with that Lands deck. He's a really, really good player. Hurley, you played against him in Pittsburgh, if you remember. It's an interesting thing to look at this. And the team trios, Sean and Hurley, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems like in these team trio events, Lands seems to be the Legacy deck of choice. And I hope that doesn't kind of continue on in perpetuity. I would like to think that one of our decks of choice has a chance in one of these. If we ever get to enter a tournament as the Tryhards, I think that would be a ball. But I'd hate to go up against the Lands player.
I think Lands is such a popular choice in this only because you can have two players who will finish in a decent amount of time. And if they both lose, the Lands player can just quit. If they one loses and one wins, the Lands player can win out and he can be the anchor. And if they both win, then you don't have to go to time at all. So I think that's a big one of why Lands is important.
We'll see how the metagame continues to develop and if progress is being made in Team Trio events, because that's what's coming up again this week. SCG Philly is a Team Trio event. Sorry, Standard, you're going to have to sit in the backseat of the family station wagon for a while. GP Houston and GP London going to be limited this weekend. In the individual events at SCG Dallas, the Standard Classic, as I touched on, had 89 players. Tristan Lube was the one on Aggro Red who defeated Sal Barboza, also on Aggro Red. For my sake, I hope that WotC stops giving immutable status to new effects that it prints. We saw the damage of making energy completely uninteractable. Blessing of the City seems to be going the same way. How difficult would it have been to have a card that you play with Ascend check every time you play it? You can count to 10 on the board, and it would make the game more interactive. This almost in some way reminds me of poison counters. Okay, yes, leeches exists, but outside of that, there's really no way to interact with poison counters. Matt, from a game design perspective, am I way off base here, or do you think Wizards has learned their lesson about making immutable portions of the game?
I don't know if they've learned their lesson, but I would agree that they generally have been a mistake. You know, we were talking about what we played earlier. I've been brewing up online, and I've just been playing in tournament practice, so it doesn't really matter that much, but I've been playing an aggro black white and then kind of a Grixis Pirates as well, and then a black white control that just has like three finishers in it. I will say each one of those has Blessing of the City card in it, or Ascend card. The Ascend creates a very unique play pattern in each deck, and it's different in each deck. As an example, my Black-White Vampire aggro, I typically like to make sure I play my one drops that are 2/1 that have flying after I have the Blessing, if I can, just to make sure that there's no shenanigans that they have. In the Grixis Pirates, there's a couple of Ascend cards in there as well, and it enforces different play patterns. I think this Ascend is not so powerful that it's going to be game-breaking. It's not Infect. It's not Energy. But and the flip side of that, I do think that they need to stop printing this, and hopefully they have learned their lesson.
Brian, are you going to pick up on Match Trail and say the Blessing of the City isn't worth so much that it matters? Or is this just another case where we should have an easy way to interact that seemed obvious the first time people opened a lot of packs and misread the rules text?
I am of the mind that there is one card type in Magic that should be non-interactable, and that's the emblem. There's a mythology about the emblem. It comes from a planeswalker. That's the only way you can get an emblem. I think that seems like good design. Other non-interactable modes in Magic are not good. Energy has kind of run rampant. I tell you what, if anybody heard Hurley and I talking last week about this, the City's Blessing was way too easy to get, even for Limited. And I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in Standard. It's just too easy. A game that goes, you know, 5, 6, 7 rounds, you're going to have that. It's not even an issue. It needed to be interactive. So, Sean, I totally agree with your idea of do a check, have a check. Do you have 10 permanents? There's ways to destroy creatures. There's ways to destroy lands. There's ways to destroy enchantments and artifacts, etc. See if they can keep it. If they can keep the City's Blessing, that's a much different effect than just kind of having it, getting the quote-unquote emblem, breathing a sigh of relief, and then just reaping the benefits for the rest of the game. Your opponent is just kind of sitting back, waiting for the inevitable to happen. And I've been on both sides of it. It feels really good when you're doing it. The game just becomes less fun because you're not as focused, because you feel like you're just so much more in control.
Yeah, I think that if you would have had it interactive and say it checks every time you play something, you probably could have ramped up the reward for playing something with it because it was interactive throughout the game. So to me, that was a way to ramp up a power curve in one specific situation, but yet your opponent would have a chance to interact with you over that. That's not the way it played out. We'll see how these effects continue to go forward as R&D develops them. In Modern, 152 players, Tristan Jones on Burn defeated Jeremy Throner on Affinity. Still nobody going to time in either of these two. I'm down with that. And in the Legacy Classic, 68 players, Chris Dunn on Sneak and Show defeated Jody Keith on Lands. Yeah, a lot of these top eights on Sunday were players whose teams didn't fare so well in the team trios on Saturday. Guys, what I noticed in this Legacy Classic, yes, only 68 players were in it, but in the top 16, Brian, there were only 4 Deathrite Shaman decks. Only 4. We talked about this being the ubiquitous one-mana Planeswalker that fits in almost any deck. Is this the result of a small field as that was really only coalescing because of who didn't do well in a Team Trios event? Or are we starting to see a play pattern maybe change in Legacy around Deathrite Shaman?
I think with the small field, that's where I would tend to lean on my analysis, is that it is a small field and I don't want to make any big metagame calls on it. But it's quite possible that people are shying away from Deathrite Shaman more to different styled decks. So I think we're just going to have to wait and see how that goes. I'm glad that we have some more Legacy data to mine on a more regular basis, as opposed to just seeing a Legacy tournament pop up here and there. The Team Trios does allow those decks to kind of get a little bit more show.
Matt, is Deathrite Shaman becoming passé in our favorite format?
I wouldn't say that. I think this is just Team Trios being Team Trios. And I also think it's just what rose to the top this week. People, when we were eating dinner yesterday in Indy, you know, so a couple of guys were talking, oh, yeah, you know, Deathrite's going to get banned. I'm like, no, it's not, guys. I'm like, you guys are not, outside of Nick, nobody is crazy, you know, like Legacy players. I'm just like, no, I disagree completely. It's not going to get banned. And again, it is a one mana Planeswalker. It's going to pop up. I don't think it's on the downside at all.
Well, the fallout from a more regular Legacy metagame would probably be interesting if you had cards for sale on a regular basis, like our guest this week used to. One of the unique things that we have been planning to do for a while here on TryHards is to have a shop owner or recent shop owner as part of our ongoing conversation. And that opportunity recently surfaced. Brian has documented the ebb and flow of the LGS in Galesburg, Illinois. And the man who has agreed to join us to give us heretofore unshared insights into the life, the times, the ups and downs, the roller coaster ride of being an LGS owner is a man who not only was an LGS owner, but he is also a broadcast personality. He lives a dual life, some would say. Ben Stone Stomberg joins us by way of Brian's Terminal. He's known as Stone, owned For the Win in Galesburg, a combination bookstore and game shop. Stone Alley Books was the book side of it. Stone, thanks for joining us here on TryHards. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, we're going to throw some things at you as we get the opportunity here tonight. Some of our patrons have chimed in as well, and I'm so glad to have this opportunity to talk to you. Give us the big picture view, the 30,000-foot view. What's it like to be the one who's responsible for a local gamer's experience by owning and operating the LGS?
Man, responsibility is not my forte. So that's probably the first mistake I made going into it. I like how you call it like a former, am I a recovering game store owner? Is what it feels like.
I'm sure you have game store owner PTSD at this point.
A little bit around the edges. Owning a game store was actually a much different and adventuresome experience than I expected it to be. Because I went into business as a bookstore selling comics, and then later partnered up with For the Win, and then was suddenly thrust into the world of gaming, especially Magic. That was basically our biggest focus in Galesburg, and I hadn't played Magic since Mirage, I think.
Oh,
is where
yeah.
I got out. Yeah.
Being the guy who's seen you more than anybody else, it was kind of a blow to the gaming community that the shop was closing up, so to speak, not forever, because the For the Win still is going to be there in some way, shape, or form. Was it one side of the store or the other being the kind of combo bookstore versus gaming store, or was it just a business decision for you overall? Because I know some of our patrons are wondering, was it just the books? Was it the Magic in general, or was it kind of a business decision based on both?
Pretty much based on both. The biggest problem that we came into towards the end there is that we hit an incredible dry spell in what had been kind of a slow year. And when I say incredible dry spell, outside of the gamers who are there to play all the time and the comic book guys who come and pick up their books every week, we were empty. And I sat empty for 3 to 4 months. It's not just my store downtown. There's mm-hmm. there's a lot locally in Galesburg that's downtown is hurting right now for customers and patronage. But that walk-through traffic, the stuff that you rely on to recruit new customers and to keep the business moving all the time, disappeared, completely disappeared. But you made a good point that I should really point out is that For the Win as an entity is continuing, will continue. My partner retained For the Win, and I took Stone Alley out of it. I think it will be maybe even a stronger business that way than it was doing both and with someone who has a lot more gaming experience than I do at the helm.
Stone, what's your breakdown on the duality of the situation? You have the local economy in Galesburg, which is a small town community in the Midwest, versus the economy of hobby shops / magic shops in general. Were you looking at the two on a different track? Was this just a perfect storm of events? Or was this just the fact that you just didn't want to do this anymore in life and you wanted to move on to the next challenge?
A perfect storm is the best way to describe it. I think even a bigger problem than just the idea of we suddenly didn't have customers, which is the scariest thing that could happen in the store, is that shopping has changed. All shopping has changed. Whether it's buying dog food or ordering cards, it's easier to click a mouse than it is to walk out your door. Most hobbyists and gamers and comic book guys would rather not deal with walking out the door. You know, it's sometimes a struggle for dudes just to get to the store. The biggest factor, I think, overall, on top of that, you had a perfect storm of like suddenly we didn't have any traffic downtown. There's a lot of construction. There's a lot of things that happened all at once.
So one of the things that some of us have been very curious about, and one of our Patreons, Avery Martin, put it into words very, very eloquently, how much of an impact on your decision to close was due to the amount or lack of support from Wizards and the WPN, or did that just not have, you know, a direct cause into the decision making, and what kind of company is Wizards to deal with?
My personal experience with Wizards was nothing but positive, specifically with the WPN, specifically with customer service and the promotions ideas and everything that they did. I feel that in the past couple years, their promotional ideas and what they're trying to push and how they're trying to push things is the correct way they should be moving the game. Many, many shop owners disagree with me about that. It is a hot button topic. People are very angry over F&M promos. Shop owners are crying foul over when previews come out for sets and how they stack the previews on top of each other and not giving it enough room for the hype for the current set and just stacking too many sets in a year. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest gripes I hear. But WPN, in the time that I've worked with them, they created, you know, a Facebook group for store owners and TOs to come to them with questions and problems and concerns, and they've directly addressed those almost immediately. They have a dedicated person who does nothing but sit on Facebook and listen to store owners. And I mean, that's what they do. It is a page of just vitriol sometimes. And then a few guys who are like, listen, look at the big picture and what you need to do with your store, and don't focus entirely on just this niche. Mm-hmm. And let them do what they're doing. As far as like personally with the store, anytime we had a problem with WPN, with anything, we called and it was fixed immediately. I never had a situation where they screwed me out of something because we made a mistake. We had times where we didn't fill out the right form for the correct promos, for the correct opening or whatever, and they always sent them to us no matter what. We never, ever had a problem maintaining Advance Plus as a store. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's insane in a town the size of 30,000 people to have an Advance Plus standing. And maybe not even necessary, really. The amount of stuff that they send, they always sent more stuff than we need for the players. One of my favorite things that they've done in the past year is changing their policy on unique promos, such as like game day mats, pre-release or buy a box promos and stuff. Mm-hmm. When you have extras of those, you can still use those as promos down the road. There's a time limit. Once you're past that time limit, you could use them for anything else you want to use them for. And that's what stores should be doing. The idea of destroying extra promos and stuff is ludicrous,
right,
and old school. And I think that kind of draconian rules that they had were before my time as an owner. They've been in process of repealing that stuff since I've been working with them. I think their push for what they're pushing in gaming is casual is casual, competitive is competitive, pushing standard and all that stuff is smart for the game and smart for the company. It's not an immediate payoff. It's something that's a long-term play for them. And a lot of players don't like it. And trust me, a lot of store owners don't like it. But I think it's the best thing for the game.
You mentioned that you like some of the changes. Mm-hmm. Do you think offering some of the stuff in the big box stores, specifically Iconic Masters, do you think that hurts your business or helped it overall?
I think that always hurts local gaming stores, always, no matter what. And it's the one thing that Wizards does that I don't agree with. There's also specific packaging and stuff that they sell to big box stores they don't sell to us that customers come in looking for because they don't know the difference. Casual players just know Magic is Magic. They don't understand there's a difference between Walmart and LGS. That type of stuff, I think, is something they really need to work on. Having more exclusive material for LGSs is a good thing. Let's face it, what do the big boxes need other than the core sets when they come out? Not just the core set, I mean, but like each expansion. When a set comes out, they should have that. You could take Commander and bundles and all that and tell it just to LGS, and you would help LGSs a lot, but you would hurt Wizards' bottom line tremendously.
You know, you mentioned the flood of products and how it was kind of creating an uproar. What about some of the products being what you might consider lower quality that are only released through? So like your From the Vaults, that type. Have you noticed that kind of hurt your foot traffic as well, or was that, did that stuff just sell out as quick, like the Arch Enemy, those types of products?
Locally, with things like From the Vault, never a problem. As a matter of fact, demand is so high, we generally didn't sell them. Most of the time when From the Vault came out, we gave them away as promos because I don't like to sell anything above MSRP on the day it comes out. I think selling products above MSRP as they release is discouraging and defeats the purpose of exclusive products. So if we can't sell it at MSRP, we might as well give it away as prizes and then people are happier that way and don't feel screwed out. We did, we've done raffles in the past. Mm-hmm. We've done, we did last time we did like a cheap pre-order. We were like, okay, so if you want to pre-order it, we won't charge you MSRP, but we'll charge you like half of what the internet is selling for. And then that way, you know, you have it. Otherwise we're going to give the rest of these away. From the Vault was very difficult that way to keep customers happy and maximize it at the same time. Arch Enemy, locally, no traction. Explorers, no traction. They both look great. Ixalan especially looks like what I would like to play. It's like pre-built, ready to sit down at your kitchen table, you and three buddies. You don't have to worry about anything, and it's like Magic meets Catan. It looks great, but it's a one-time thing, and nobody's willing to invest in it at that price point. They made the cards and the decks too good. You could have made the decks a little bit toned down and just as fun to play against each other, as opposed to trying to do some higher reprints and then drive the price point up.
Did you see any traction off of, you know, they had the D&D settings of some of the Magic stuff. Was there Magic players transitioning over to that? Did that pull in any additional business, or is that just another product to sell?
Our gaming community is so small and kind of segmented in itself that it didn't really have that much impact. We either have guys who play everything, or we have guys who only play one thing, and they're either D&D guys or Magic guys, and the two don't really meet. I mean, the D&D guys are interested in the Magic D&D stuff. That's about it.
We as players at an LGS, when we show up at tournaments, we kind of like the shop owners on those Facebook pages. Sometimes we do nothing but and I've been it's true. I mean, I've been there. I try to be one of the people who tones down the and things, but I've heard very many people take you to task for something completely out of your control. Maybe some things in your control, who knows. Is there something that was very eye-opening to you about player communities and about what you would love to pass on to player communities from an LGS standpoint that people need to keep in mind when they go down there for a tourney?
Limited to 10, please. Right. There has been some times that I felt a little attacked and roasted, but I think that everybody who's in this business goes through that. That's just part of the deal. I have thought in the past that perhaps our local community is a little bit more caustic than needs be, especially for the size of the community. The types of troubles that I hear about from other store owners come from much larger stores than what we are. The biggest thing that I would say to any Magic community is what you guys are always advocating, is you need to be ambassadors. There is no Magic community unless you're welcoming players into your Magic community and you're making it a positive thing. And that's it, period. I cannot tell you how many people have come to me and told me they will never play in the shop, not because of me, but because of the players. That's disheartening, because you can't fix that as a store owner. As a store owner, you can't be like, yeah, man, but it's different now. It's different. Because they're like, nah, it's never going to be different. We play at home. The majority of our Magic and gaming sales in general go to at-home tabletop players. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These are guys who play casual at home. They don't want to deal with formats. They don't want to deal with anything. They want to buy pre-constructed commander stuff and tinker with it. And that's where the bulk of our sales are. As a matter of fact, probably specifically with Magic, 2/3 of our sales are people who never play in the shop or only play in the shop very rarely. The constant gamers, the grinders, if you will, spend the least. Not in every case. There's exceptions to that rule. We have, I can think of a couple customers. I don't want to name names. I said I wouldn't name names on this stuff. But I can think of two customers who would not spend any money anywhere but the shop. And spend money they do. And thank God. That's what keeps you having a place to play, for you to have a Magic community outside of your house. It's absolutely cool if you just want to play with your buddies at your house. That's great. But if you want something more competitive, you have to make sure that the community is less competitive to get you to those competitive events. You have to have new players coming in and not feeling threatened or overwhelmed or talked down to is a really big one. I have seen so many new players or up-and-coming players lose faith in the game because the grinders don't have any respect for them. Or they don't feel that they have any respect for them.
Right, and I have witnessed that as well when I've been down there. And it's really hard to jump into the middle of a game, especially like if I'm in the middle of a game and I see it going on, I try to make it a point after the fact to say, hey, not cool. Let's you know, be as supportive and, like you said, act like an ambassador as much as possible.
And it's difficult for TOs and store owners to police that very well because, one, you're trying to run the store, and, two, unless you're at the table playing the game with them or, like, in a judge capacity, like when we have judges for PPTQs, I don't know what language is being used. Mm-hmm. I don't know what people are actually saying. And unless I see a confrontation, unless I see someone get angry or see someone upset, there's no real indicator to me that things aren't going along, so it can fester.
Yeah, that's surprising to me that two-thirds of the store business was like casual player. That's actually kind of shocking to me. Sean, I'd be curious to see if that's similar down in Quincy, which is probably a similar size community, I'm guessing.
I'm not going to speak to percentages, but I'll tell you that there is a large percentage of people who don't participate in the more competitive events, F&M, things of that nature, because we see bigger turnouts for pre-releases and bigger turnouts for game day. And Stone, those are both branded as more casual events. Were you having the same experience that those more casual events, pre-release, game day, drew a bigger crowd?
You hit something, a hot button topic for me and for Wizards right there, just casually in passing, is Friday Night Magic is not competitive. Stop thinking that, everyone. It's not competitive. That is where you're talking to the community and the players. And that's what Wizards is trying to push with taking away promo cards and giving you tokens instead. And why they're trying to push Standard Showdown for that to be a much more competitive thing, where they're giving you packs of cards and foils and shinies. They're trying to make Friday Night Magic casual. And things like game day and things like pre-releases are great. That's always the best way to welcome people in. Pre-releases bring in guys who only play at pre-releases every time. Every time you get guys you only see at midnight, or guys you only see that weekend. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that either. That's awesome. We want that because that's interest in the game that keeps them going, and that fosters the community. It's the week-to-week community that becomes a problem sometimes. And that's not just here. I think that happens in many shops all over the place. The first year that I was running the shop, we were open, the first year of me being a game store owner, I thought it was only here. Like, I was like, this can't be happening anywhere else. Mm-hmm. My partner's shop, he has in Moline, Trademark, it's not like that at all. The community that plays there, they play there, they're his crowd. If they're not his crowd, they go elsewhere. But in a town like Galesburg, with the size we have, there's not an elsewhere option without an hour-long drive.
Right.
My only critique with your saying F&M is casual is that Wizards is trying to reverse all of the training that they've given to players who are invested, quote-unquote, in franchise players over the years, because on the weekends, we're playing in competitive events. Saturday is not available to play in a competitive event. That's where you build the new behavior model for casual players on Saturdays. Leave F&M as the competitive sort of pre-weekend event where I can come in and get three rounds of the deck I want to play that Saturday at a PPTQ or whatever it is. I think that's the only big mistake they made on that front. Our guest this week has been Ben Stone Stomberg. If you were going to give two pieces of advice pro for somebody who wanted to open an LGS, what would they be? And follow that up with two pieces of advice that you would say, hey, these are things you need to watch out for, not necessarily don't do it.
That's a tough question in my position right now. One of the pros of it is that it's always great to be in business for yourself and to be running your own operation the way you see the operation fit to be run. That's always awesome. And if you have a passion for it, you should always follow that passion. I never have discouraged anyone from going into any kind of business. But know your territory, and it would be better to have a better hard knowledge of the gaming than I did when I was coming in. I hadn't played Magic since 97 or so, at least not seriously. I kind of was under the opinion that I speak all dialects of geek, from books to gaming to comics to movies to whatever. Yeah, Magic is one of those things, more than any of the other games, where it's kind of like you have to be one of us, one of us. And if not, there's a steep learning curve. The other thing that's a big pro, interacting with some of the customers on a daily to weekly basis can be the best part of your entire business. And that was something that I knew before from my comic book customers, but it was something that was even like a more rewarding experience with gaming, because there was kind of a turning. There had to be a transition after I came in, and I'm not a real likable guy. I mean, you guys are okay, but like, so those players, that loyalty that they have, and some of the players who will go out of their way to do anything for the gaming community are the greatest. I said I wouldn't name names, but I would trade 20 gamers for one more Ryan Ashley. And that doesn't mean anything to anybody.
No. Kid, it means something to me, absolutely. No, like, Ryan's great.
He loves to game, and that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And that's also the hardest part of shutting down. The cons. Oh, man, where do you list the cons? You know, the thing about being in control of your own operation means that you set your hours and you do your own thing, but that generally means it's your entire life forever and ever. Amen. And forget having anything happen outside the walls of the store. That's tough. At least for me, I tend to be more of a work-to-live than live-to-work guy. So you need to have a driving passion for what it is you're doing. The other con is that you just really need a thick skin. And don't be afraid to be the bad guy. Because you have to do what's best for the business and what's best for the community. And don't worry about everything else. Like I said, people don't like me.
Ben Stone Stomberg, former owner of the LGS for the Win in Galesburg, Illinois. Our guest this week here on TryHards. Stone, it's been illuminating. Thank you so much for your time. I know Brian and Matt feel the same way. This has really been a behind-the-curtain look by somebody who doesn't have any skin in the game anymore, so they could tell us like it really is. Appreciate your insights and appreciate your time.
Thank you. And I just want to say real quick, on a personal level, you and Brian specifically have been some of the best people in the door. A lot of times the out-of-town guys in general, and I really remember Sean coming in the first time, are the best thing for your ego as a shop owner, because they come in and they see it new. They're not seeing it every day, and they're just like, this is amazing. That's just always greatly appreciated. And you guys have always been really good player ambassadors, and that's exactly what the game needs. Just keep recruiting more people and be as nice to everyone as you can be.
Which is why we don't introduce Hurley to very many people, so that we can keep that reputation.
Perhaps as much as possible.
And if Brian and I were the best people in the door, I now understand why you had to close down.
Misquote, fake news.
Fake news.
Ben Stone Stomberg, thanks so much, Stone, for your insights and time, not only running the LGS in Galesburg, but also coming on and sharing your thoughts with us here on TryHards. Maybe he would have lasted a little bit longer. Okay, no, who am I kidding? That wouldn't have been the case. If Matt was giving him advice on how to price cards in his LGS. It's time to jump in the elevator this week. Matt, looks like you're going vampire?
Sanctum Seeker, what I like to refer to as the Black Hellrider. This card is very powerful. It's my top end in my black-white aggro vampire deck, and I'm saying you should be picking up these foils. I think this is going to see a lot of play in EDH vampire-style decks. This is also going to see play in Standard, and I think it could actually see play in Modern if a vampire deck ever pops up. You can get the foils for about $350 or so. Sanctum Seeker, pick up your foils.
Sanctum Seeker in the elevator this week here on TryHards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. Brian, what are we brewing with this week?
Well, we're going to stick with our vampire themes this week, and there's a card that I touched on last week that I'm really, really excited about. Twilight Prophet. This is a vampire cleric, 2 black and 2 other, 2/4 flyer that has ascend. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have the city's blessing, reveal the top card of your library and put it into your hand. Each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is that card's converted mana cost. Guys, I'm going to start this week with 3 minutes to brew, because I am just all over this card. I feel like at the worst, this is a mid to late game breaker in Standard. Like I said before, this is pretty easy to get the city's blessing. At the worst, it's drawing you an extra card. Whether it's a land over the course of the game, an extra card is pretty awesome. With all of the high casting costs that is happening in Standard and in Rivals of Ixalan, I feel like that ability on Twilight Prophet, pretty unbelievable, an uncounterable loss of life and gain of life. So I think this is going to have a place in Standard, maybe even pushing out Chandra Torch of Defiance in the right Grixis build. Hurley, I'm going to ship it over to you. Do you think Twilight Prophet's got that kind of power, or is it just going to be kind of a role player moving forward?
I don't know. I actually was playing around with this quite a bit. I like the card a whole lot. I just don't know where it fits. I think you're right. It goes into kind of a, you know, like a mid-range control-y deck, and I haven't found the mid-range vampire deck yet. Do I think it's a good card? Absolutely. Do I know where it fits? No. Here's the big minus, is that it dies to the Glorybringer triggers, and Glorybringer is going to be all over. So you need to play this in some type with either a pump spell or be able to give it protection. Having the Ascend on it, I mean, I guess that's just an easy way to have another Ascend thing on the battlefield. If you don't have Ascend, then it's just a 2/4 flyer. Is that what I'm understanding, right? The decks it fits into, you're not going to have Ascend a lot of times until it's like a real late. And then it's going to be a 2/4 flyer for 4 that draws you a card. It has that weird dichotomy of I don't know where it fits. It's a strange one for me.
It is a strange one. And I think the obvious home is in Black-White Vampires, because the game's going to go long with your life gain, and you have the tribal synergies that it can be used for, and you're probably going to be playing tokens or some low drops, which will ensure that you get Blessing of the City on a regular basis. But for me, I actually like this as a one-of in like a black-red aggro deck. Because you're going to get in for so much damage early, then red gives you reach to put them under duress, that if you can count on this to trigger maybe once to put your opponent away as an uncounterable source of damage. Because if you flip over something as small as Lightning Strike, that's 2 off the strike and then 3 for the strike itself, which is a total of 5. So I think this would be interesting in some of the black-red aggro decks that we see coming to right now. It's not a build-around in my mind. It's a one-of, but it's a one-of that can give you the reach that the former Ramunap Ruins would give you. This could be replacing that as a way to have a win outside the red zone in your aggro deck. Twilight Prophet, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on TryHards. Great pick, Brian. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Well, I was happy to kind of go up against a deck that you have proffered the last few weeks to see kind of different iterations of that. That's pretty cool for Modern. I'm not going to spoil your tech. But it was good to just kind of get my Modern decks out and to kind of sling them. I must say that the thing I did to get better at Magic this week was I didn't sleep very well on Friday night into Saturday morning. And I woke up Saturday morning with one thing on my mind, and that I had to get a deck list out kind of to the masses just before I kind of lost control of it. So it was really, really fun to brew a little bit of Standard, wondering how it was going to fit into the metagame going forward. I'm still working on a blue-green pummeler list that Sean's kind of taken a look at and was a little bit more positive than I thought he would be about it, actually. So for all of you who are looking to maybe break your first couple weeks of new Standard post-ban, maybe check out the blue-green pummeler list and see if you can rework it, because I'd love to have some insight into it. So getting that brew part of me going was probably what I did to get better at Magic this week. Hurley, what did you learn from Indy, and is Pauper now your most favoritest Magic format of all time?
I wouldn't say Pauper's my favorite, but really enjoyed playing Pauper. Definitely going to be playing it more online, and I think we have a kind of a schedule set up moving forward on Wednesdays to try and stream Wednesday nights. That's why I'm going to try to make that work. I think what I learned most, actually, Brian, was very similar to what you did. When they banned all that stuff, I had a lot of working from home this previous week. I was, you know, waiting for stuff. A lot of times I have to wait for emails to come in, wait for stuff to process. It takes a while to process online. I would, like, scratch down some brews, and I'd go on and I'd scratch down some brews. And so I actually came up with 4 or 5 really fun deck lists. And this is where that Black-White Vampires came from, and then the Grixis Pirates. Really enjoyed that. And then, like, once I started reading some of the articles that came out, I was relatively close in my thinking about where the format was going to go. Forgot how much I liked not just net decking. I did net deck and Pauper, but I saw some amazing Pauper deck. They were very unique, and I'm going to do some adjustments. Like, I saw a really good green-white tokens deck that I really want to try, so I definitely learned a lot from Pauper, and I definitely learned a lot from the bans, because I was super excited to be doing some brewing after the bans.
Those are all great ways to get better at Magic. For me, it was what Brian said. He shared his blue-green pummeler list with me. It is so far away from what I would normally play in Standard that it got my juices flowing looking at it. And Brian, I'm a big enough believer in your list that I went out and purchased several of the cards that I was missing in order to play that list. Is it perfect? Is it going to go undefeated? Probably not. A list like that's going to have some variance to it, but refresh your perspective and try something different. And I can't wait to try this at my next standard FNM. Blue-Green Pummeler. I'll leave it to Brian if he's going to share the tech with you or not at patreon.com/tryhards. Don't be afraid to try something new. It always makes Magic feel fresh once again. Speaking of fresh, special thanks to Ben Stone Stomberg for joining us this week and giving us a look behind the scenes at the concerns, the passions, and unique heart that it takes to be an LGS owner. Oh, you brave soul, you may just be what our community needs. Hopefully you can fill that role. And if so, we'll see you again next time here on Tryhards.